No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I'm your host, Jess Root. Welcome to the show. We've got a post-draft show. We finished up the NFL draft this last weekend. So tonight, if you are listening live, thank you. As you'll be able to, if you want, you can give us a call in when Seth Cox joins us. We'll be talking NFL draft with Arizona Cardinals, the results, and a little bit of other sort of news that just came down through the internet via email and Twitter on Tuesday. So we're going to go over some headlines in just a bit. But today we're going to be focusing on the NFL draft of the Arizona Cardinals. Their seven draft picks, their undrafted rookie free agents, and basically reactions to everything like that. If you want to join us on the show, give us a call, 646-478-3787. Again, that's 646-478-3787 here on Revenge of the Birds Radio. If you're listening via download, well, thank you. Obviously, you won't be able to call in, but if you have comments or reactions, you can hit me up at Twitter at Senor Jess Root. That's S-E-N-O-R. J-E-S-S-R-O-O-T, or the site account as well, at Revenge of Birds. No, the. Didn't have room for it. Or if you aren't already, head on over to revengeofthebirds.com, our SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. Best community of Arizona Cardinals fans you will find on the web. So let's go ahead and get started, as we'll start with the headlines of the week, as the Arizona Cardinals the NFL had their NFL draft, had the NFL draft, 2015 NFL draft on Thursday night. They had the first round. Second and third rounds were held on Friday afternoon and evening, and then the fourth through seventh rounds were completed on Saturday. The Cardinals started out with eight picks in the draft, 7-1 pick in each of the seven rounds, and then they received a seventh round compensatory pick, the last pick in the draft. They made one move to move down, gaining an extra pick, and then on Saturday they traded up, giving up a couple of picks in addition to swapping picks in the fourth round. We'll get into that a little bit. So what the Cardinals came up with in the first round, they came away with offensive tackle DJ Humphreys out of Florida as their prize of the first round. On day two, the Cardinals traded back three spots from pick number 55 to 58. And with that, they picked defensive end Marcus Golden out of Missouri, who will play outside linebacker for the Cardinals. They also got back in return. They picked up an extra draft pick that they used in a trade to move up. They moved up in the fourth round, but on day And again on Friday night, the third round came around. They picked up running back David Johnson out of Northern Iowa, a player I was very pleased for them to get. I thought they matched really well what the Cardinals are going to do, and we're going to talk about that. Then Saturday rolled around, day three of the NFL draft, and the Arizona Cardinals decided to move up, and they traded up to draft Rodney Gunter, a bit of an unknown out of Delaware State, a defensive lineman out of Delaware State. They traded up, swapped fourth round picks, gave up their sixth round pick, gave up their regular seventh round pick because they can't trade away the compensatory pick. And so they're left with two fifth round picks, consecutive fifth round selections, one that they had picked up in the Marcus Golden trade down in the second round. In the fifth round, we had two straight picks. The first of the two was Shaq Riddick, defensive end out of West Virginia, speedy pass rusher. And then with the very next pick, they selected the fastest guy in the draft, receiver slash returner J.G. Nelson out of the University of Alabama, Birmingham, the program that no longer has a football program. Then the sixth round, we got to sit around and wait for a bit. No sixth round pick. No seventh round pick until the very last pick in the draft, known as Mr. Irrelevant, pick number 256. And the Cardinals rounded out their draft by selecting Louisville tight end Gerald Christian. And that rounded up, so you get seven picks in the draft, after which they announced the signing on Tuesday of 14, that is, undrafted rookie free agents, as they'll have rookie camp at the end of this week. However, that was not the biggest news. Obviously, that was the big news of the weekend. However, there was some big news that came out, a bit of a surprise. It's actually shocking to most of the organization, and that would happen to be the retirement of veteran tight end John Carlson, the same John Carlson who was signed to a two-year free agent contract last offseason. That retirement kind of hit the Cardinals kind of hard because, as we're going to talk about here in just a minute, they don't really have anybody with any sort of experience at the position. The reasons for his retirement were not given, other than the fact it was a decision he and his family made, and they're excited for the next part of their life. Everyone that had a chance to talk, the AZ Cardinals reporters, Darren Urban, the people he talked to, clearly sounded shocked of what had happened with the decision to retire, especially since he had been on Monday, he had been there at the training facility, at the team facility, participating in workouts. And I guess that's that. But we're going to go ahead and start tonight. So again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. If you want to give us a call, 646-473-787. Give us a call. Question, comments on the NFL draft and the Arizona Cardinals picks. Seth and I've got Seth on the line. I'm going to bring him on as he... Well, we had a little bit of technical difficulties going on here for just a moment. I got dropped from the show. Seth, are you on? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Jess. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks. I don't know what happened. I got dropped. So right now I'm listening. I'm kind of on the phone here talking through my back end. No, I'm not talking through my rear end. I had to call in myself on another phone, and I'm talking that way. So Seth, we're going to talk. Welcome to the show. This is Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Again, we had a little bit of technical difficulty. Sorry about that. We're going to talk NFL draft. But first, let's talk about John Carlson. How surprised were you by the news that Carlson has hung up his cleats?
You know, I'm surprised, but honestly happy when a guy can walk away on his own terms and doesn't have to worry about his health. That's important. And we saw that with Carlson.
Actually, got a caller on the line. I want you to, if you're on hold, just go ahead and sit tight. We're going to get you in just a minute. So don't go anywhere. I'm going to, did I just lose Seth? I guess that is Seth coming on in on the Google phone. Was that you, Seth, on the Google phone calling in?
Yeah, I couldn't get my headphones to work, so I wanted to. I didn't want to have you on the speaker out of the computer. I didn't know how that was going to sound. So,
all right. Well, awesome. So, I was. I mean, we know heading into when he was signed a year ago, we knew that there were injury concerns, in particular, the head injuries. Dan Bickley tweeted out today that he, by Carlson's recollection, I mean, there were five concussions he had, two or three. It was either two in college and three in the pros, or three in the college and two in the pros. So there were concerns and heading into this season, heading into coming as a Cardinal. And he really was a disappointment in terms of production. I am shocked at it, and it's really a bummer for the Cardinals in terms of the makeup of the room so far. I have no problem with him deciding to do it. I wonder if there was the concern, well, they made it through the one season healthy. I know the head injuries and concussions has become a more and more of an issue, especially with some families. The Warners, when Kurt Warner retired, that was one of the things that his family was concerned about, was when was going to be that next hit that actually caused great damage. We saw the 49ers, that they had Chris Borland retired, citing the concern about head injuries. And Carson Palmer kind of said it right. He feels bad, but he's glad that Carlson is able to do it. But he said, if you're not 100% into the game, if you're only at 80%, you're going to get hurt. And so if you play the game a little tentatively, you're going to end up getting hurt. And that's not what we wanted to see. What do you think in terms of, what is your reaction to how this affects the Cardinals, in particular that tight end room?
You and I had the conversation when the offseason started about that. I thought the smart play was going to be to let go of Carlson and retain Hausler, just because, one, the injury concerns, and two, I just think that Hausler was, you know, a little bit better last year. So now this kind of just continues that thought process I had, where, you know, you and I talk off the air a lot, and you can, you know, confirm I wasn't a big fan of this signing when it happened. I'm just not a fan of a guy that can't stay healthy. And so, you know, when I see people talking about, hey, let's bring in Zach Miller, I'm like, well, that's the same thing, basically. Like, it's a different body part, but you're hoping that a guy stays healthy, as opposed to signing somebody, you know, that has been healthy. Freak injuries happen. I mean, Carson Palmer last year with the elbow was a freak injury. But when you sign a guy with known injury problems, I think you're just, you know, you're hoping to get something instead of knowing that they can play. And so I think that's what happened with with Carlson. And now, you know, like you said, the tight end room is really, really young. There are some veteran names out there. Jermaine Gresham's already been mentioned by RotoWorld.com. And, you know, everybody that likes ASU has brought up Zach Miller as a local kid. And so we'll see what happens. But I think they have a good young tight end, Darren Fells, a guy that they need to be a good young tight end in Troy Nicholas. And then they have, you know, a guy that's more of an H-back type player their seventh round draft pick, and his name just escaped me as I was looking up tight end. Gerald Christian. And so, you know, they could probably use a more traditional tight end in the Nicholas Fells mold, in case, you know, God forbid, one of those guys go down. So, you know, Christian offers a different type of play, which we'll get to, but so I think a more traditional tight end would be where to go.
And kind of my thing this offseason, what I thought would have been, thought might happen, is they would let Carlson go and then bring in another veteran type tight end. The name I threw out there, just because of his relationship to the Steelers and the connection to Bruce Arians, was Matt Spaeth. He ended up signing elsewhere. That didn't happen. And we made the comment after free agency with the fact that Carlson was still around. I guess they were going to ride him another year, call Lasik, chalk it up to, well, that things just didn't work out all that well. But in terms of production, I don't think it's that big a deal because his role diminished greatly by the end of the season because, one, he's almost worthless as a blocker. You could say at best he is an adequate blocker, and that's at best. And for the most part, what the comment has been, he's been dreadful, a dreadful blocker. And so his role as a pass catcher was really what they needed. They needed to catch pass, and he dropped pass after pass after pass. And his playing time went down to almost nil at the end of the season, where it was Darren Fells getting most of the playing time, and even Rob Hausler. So the way I saw is that he'd be let go, and they want another veteran in the room. My issue with Carlson's announcement leaves the team in a tough spot because as much as they need Darren Fells to produce, and they really need Troy Nicholas to turn out this year, the issue is this. They have a combined 17 regular season games played of experience among the four tight ends on their roster between Troy Nicholas and Darren Fells. Guess what? Those are the 17 games. They got Ted Bolster, never played an NFL game. They got Ifeani Moma, never played a game. They got Gerald Christian now. Never been in the NFL until now. Especially heading the offseason workouts, I think it is crucial that they have a guy like Carlson. In fact, that was what I was most impressed about him, is that the comments. Now, yes, Carson Palmer raved about the way Carlson runs routes and the way, but it was mostly the way he went about football. A very hard worker. He did things the right way. And in particular, the thing that it really did in Bruce Arians' comment is what it did to that tight end room. It elevated the play of Rob Hausler. He was a very professional player. When you don't have that with a bunch of players, that doesn't necessarily say everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket or anything like that. But you do lose that direction. They haven't been in the league long enough to know this is how you do things. And I think they need to bring in someone like that. And so here we look at the tight end availability. You've got Jermaine Gresham, Zach Miller. You've got a bunch of names that the most, productive, even the name Martellus Bennett in Chicago, who's reportedly up for a deal. They're looking to trade him. I don't know if that's what they need, because they're already counting on their production from Fells. They don't need somebody to take really a lot of playing time. They need someone, I would say they need an inline guy, maybe an H-back guy. James Casey, would have been a fantastic match. He ended up signing with Denver. If they bring in a guy who's a veteran, who doesn't need the ball, and is more that traditional blocker, what a Spaeth would have been. And the guy that I threw out that I don't know if the Cardinals would be interested in, is they brought him in for a couple weeks, Matthew Mulligan, 6-year vet, played for the Titans, played for the Jets. They had him in last year after Nicholas went on injured reserve, and then he ended up getting cut not too long after that, simply because, well, Matt Shaughnessy was activated from IR, and they needed a roster spot in Mulligan. So I don't know if he was cut so much because he didn't fit, they didn't know what he was doing, he wasn't good, or if it was just a numbers game. He's still available. He might, and he's a blocking guy. Are there any names that intrigue you at all?
Not particularly right now, but I think if you could get a guy, like you said, like a Mulligan, that would be okay. You don't need a big splash. Like, I think people get, they want names, and that doesn't, that doesn't always work out. Like I said, Todd Heap didn't work out. John Carlson was a name, didn't really work out. Find guys that can play, that can stay healthy. Jermaine Gresham, while he is a name, he's the most intriguing of the big names. I know there's a guy that played in Oakland. I'm not sure where he played last year. David Osbury, I'd have to even look, but that's a guy that isn't bad, and I don't even know if he's hurt or what's going on. So another guy, that you can look at. It's just such a weak position in the NFL overall right now. So it's hard to be super, you know, excited about any of these names. You do wonder if they would have known ahead of time. And I saw somebody ask Darren Urban this, and he said he didn't think so. But if they knew ahead of time, if they would have drafted maybe Max Williams in round two instead of trading back and to pick up an extra fourth round pick or fifth round pick, whatever it was that they ended up trading anyways.
And I don't even know about that because, by all reports, this tight end class was kind of awful. And take Troy Nicholas. Troy Nicholas probably, as I read, and maybe you told me, but basically Nicholas would have been the number one, probably would have been the number one tight end in this class this year. And there were definitely more talented tight ends than Nicholas heading into the last year.
Yeah, and I think Nicholas would have probably been tied in one or two. Max Williams, it was between Williams and Nicholas. Basically, the only difference between Williams and Nicholas is Williams is already what we want Nicholas to be. So, but they're similar in style and play and things of that nature. So, and again, we talked about it with the inside linebacker, possibility and things of that nature. How much capital can you put into the tight end position? And, if you're talking about 2 second-round picks and, in the last 5 years, you're talking about 3 day 2 picks. I mean, that's a lot of draft capital.
Yeah. Let's move on from the tight end talk. Since what we want to do is talk NFL draft. The Arizona Cardinals with their 7 picks and their 14 undrafted free agents. Kind of the plan for tonight. We're going to go over the picks. We're going to give a quick reaction, getting kind of why. Do we love the pick? Do we like the pick? Is it meh? Or do we not like the pick? So let's go down that list. Let's start with round one. DJ Humphries, immediate reaction. What's your take on that?
You and I talked about it right before the draft and, in our draft preview. And that was, if they drafted a right – or an offensive tackle, but a guy that's going to be a right tackle, we were fine with that because that just said that they want to continue to improve the offensive line. Humphries wasn't my highest graded tackle on the board, but I'm not going to knock the pick at all. So I think it's, I loved it.
And me, I liked it. I wrote that it was a boring pick. It was a boring pick for first round because there were much sexier type of, especially when running backs on the table, pass rushes on the table. When you get those guys, when you get those positions out there, or the possibility of trading it, when you end up with an offensive lineman, when you're not even sure he's going to be a starter this year, you're kind of like, I like the pick. Now there were other players. Obviously we talked about, you talked about Diggy. I talked about Preston Smith. I really liked them, and I wanted them to trade back and pick them up. Humphries, I don't have any problem with. He's got potential. We've talked about how he fits, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. So, like the pick. Don't love it, because I would have liked to have seen them take someone like Diggy or Preston Smith. Preston Smith went early in the second round. Diggy went a little bit later. Obviously, NFL teams had different ideas. I just liked it. Second round pick, Marcus Golden. What's your take? Like it, love it, meh, don't like it.
I'm meh on that one. One of the things that I talked about last week on Shane Ray kind of falls into Marcus Golden. When you talk about things that aren't, I'm trying to think of the word, something, that you can like count or something like that. It's hard for me to be like, to use that as a reason that a guy is going to be a good player in the league. And, when you talk about Marcus Golden, the first thing that you always hear is some form of about his motor, that he's relentless, that he, is a hard worker. And at some point you have to have the physical ability to put together with that. And that's one of my concerns with Golden is I'm not worried that he's not going to work hard enough. He's not going to be a Cody Brown type where, he gets in the NFL, gets hurt, and then just doesn't care. But I think he could be a guy that comes in and works hard, but doesn't, you know, is a little limited physically, and that hurts him in terms of being a consistent every down player.
And for me, the golden pick is more light.
I didn't love it.
It wasn't quite meh like it was for you. But I really appreciated what I wanted to hear. There was digging on the board, but I kind of like it, especially after listening to Bruce Arians and Steve Kino. Granted, they gush about the pick. They gush about the pick, absolutely. And so what you have, they compare him to Lamar Woodley. They compare him to James Harrison. He is the perfect type of player that they want in their locker room because he's a leader, well-respected. He's a high IQ type player on the field, high effort. And from there, I kind of like the pick, especially with the potential upside. He did have the production. I actually have a piece coming out because you look at the 10 sacks. You look at it early on. If you just look at the game log, you see 4 of his sacks of his 10 came against like Toledo and South Dakota State. And then he went nothing for a few weeks. But then he closed out the season strongly. And if you look back at those games early, he did have some hamstring issues dealing with it. I like the pick. I don't love the pick, but I'm not so meh on it that I don't like it. Let's take the third round. The running back David Johnson of Northern Iowa. I love this pick. I know you don't love it, but I love it. It was a player that I kind of picked out looking at what the Cardinals were looking for, and it was a perfect match for me. And what I wanted out of that is he's a big back. He can run, but the skill set he has, even though he's not necessarily the big physical back, he, just by nature of his size alone, makes him a better option in short yardage situations. But he has the same skill set in terms of the type of runner that he is compared to Andre Ellington. And the receiving ability means that he can make really a nice impact on the team.
Yeah, and I, you know, when you say I don't love it, it's just I'm always concerned about big backs that don't run big. And that's my one thing with him, but he has some, Darren McFadden to his game where, you know, he runs upright a little bit, or I shouldn't say a little bit. I mean, he obviously runs upright in all the videos you watch, and he's a high cut guy. He was a wide receiver for a long time. So that's part of his, you know, quote unquote issue with how he plays. He runs more like a wide receiver than a running back right now. But I think if he ends up becoming the Matt Forte type of guy that we talked about, where, you know, Forte's not the greatest short yardage back, and, you know, he struggles at times, but he does a lot of good things, and he's such a big part of their passing game that I think you can want and see the same type of production from David Johnson in, you know, maybe not year one, but coming into year two and three. So that's why I like the pick, because the upside's there. He checks all the boxes. You want to see a little more physicality from him when he runs.
Look at the fourth round. We've got which for me was the biggest head scratcher of them all, and probably for everyone, because no one had ever heard of him. And so not only did they draft a guy that wasn't on anybody's radar, he didn't go to the combine, defensive lineman Rodney Gunter out of Delaware State. Not only did no one know anything about him, they traded up and gave up their sixth. They swapped picks to move up, traded a sixth and a seventh. They'll give up two extra picks to get him. The Gunter pick, I don't even know what to say. I mean, you know, after talking to Gunter on the phone on the conference call, after listening to what Arians and Kime said, they really think he's a special player. But I can't even give – I can't say I like it. I can't say I love it. I can't even really say, man, I really am befuddled about this player and really intrigued.
Yeah, and I talked to a guy named Emery Hunt who works for footballgameplan.com. It's his own site, and he goes and scouts all these players. So he went and saw Delaware State versus Monmouth, and he had a scouting report on him from that game. And so I asked him, you know, what do you think about this guy? And he said, you know, honestly, he's like, I had a, I think he said a 6-round grade on him. He's like, I'm not surprised that a team grabbed him early because, you know, guys that are almost 6'5 and 300 pounds that move really like, well. Yeah. Yeah, that move like Gunter does. I mean, he and Marcus Golden run like the same time. So his short area quickness is really strong. And, you know, I haven't seen anything other than the YouTube highlights, and those are highlights for a reason. And, you know, you don't see the bad, you see the good. I think the one thing people are going to have to remember about this draft pick and kind of focus on this draft pick is that this is a draft pick for 2016 at the earliest and probably 2017. I mean, he'll probably start getting some playing time in 16. And then he'll probably, you know, if he's going to make it, he'll probably start in 17. But this isn't a pick like anything you get from Gunter this year is just gravy. I mean, if he gets, you know, some mop-up duty time, if he gets, you know, the same Kareem Martin type of usage that we saw last year, I think you just have to be happy with that.
Let's look at the fifth-round pick. Well, they have 2 fifth-round picks. The first one, Shaq Riddick. What do you think of him out of West Virginia?
I love Shaq. We talked about him on the Draft Strategist podcast, and we were very high on his upside. He's one of the few like late round big school guys that are kind of unknowns because and you know hidden gems because he came from a small school. It's Gardner Webb, right? He came from Gardner Webb, and then went to West Virginia and super freaky athlete, but he plays in that stupid like 3-3-5 defense that they run, so you can't really. He doesn't really get a chance to rush the passer as a pure edge guy. You know, in 3 years, looking back, it wouldn't shock me one bit if he's a better player than Marcus Golden or like a better pick. And that's not a shot at Golden. That's just how much athletic upside a guy like Shaq Riddick has.
Now, who was it? I think it was Prisco's. I can't remember which one of the draft grades I got. The comment about Golden, which I think is probably dead on, that he's going to be a much more solid pick than a special pick. I'm totally okay with that. Riddick, I love the pick. Now, when I first saw it, I didn't know anything about him, but when I talked to him on the phone after the conference call, and then looking up a little bit, he's a guy, speed rusher. It's a speed rusher. The Cardinals never have those speed rushers. But then he looked at his build. It was tall. But then I saw his frame. He's a little bit lit. He's got the 245. It's not quite big enough. It's not as big as the Cardinals really like. Well, what do we know? He's added 15 pounds. He's up to 260. That's perfect. So he's got speed. He's got size. And he wants to play standing up. He's ready. He had to take on, you know, and really kind of an undersized, underweight type of player to play on the defensive line. And he was kind of dominating then, and he held his own. And he's ready to manhandle some people. He's ready to dominate. He's almost my 1A in terms of favorite pick, even though I don't know if he's going to do anything this year. Just the upside really intrigues me because of the skill set that he has. And add on top of that, he's got a very driven type of play. He graduated from high school already with an associate's degree. So he was 70 credits ahead. He goes to Gardner Webb. He graduates in 3 years, knowing about the transfer rule. And so he dominates there at the FCS schools and completely, you know, everything. And then it has a year of eligibility that he still is. He transfers over to West Virginia, and he doesn't dominate, but he definitely plays well, where you could see there was still some growth and potential to. I love that pick. The next pick was this one pick later. Go ahead.
I think, you know, the one thing you worry about is, you know, people are going to say that lack of production at West Virginia. But again, he played in a really stupid system.
And a college defense. So, you got to love the college defenses.
Yeah. But I mean, like he played the same type of position. They asked Calais Campbell to play, and he was 245 pounds. So that he wasn't going to be a guy that, you know, won consistently from that spot. Now, I'm not, again, he's kind of like Gunter in the same way. Like if you get anything from him in 2015, that's good. But if he's not on the field until 2016, that's not a big deal. Like, I know people are all expecting.
And he's a fifth round pick. I mean, he's a fifth round pick.
Yeah. I know people are all expecting to get Ed Stinson and Andre Ellington type production from all these late round guys, but there's a reason that those guys produced, and it was because the people ahead of them were not any good. If that's still happening, you know, into year three in the Keim and Arians regime, that's a problem. And I don't think it is going to happen, because I don't think those guys are going to be good enough to beat the ones that are ahead of them already.
Let's look at the very next pick, receiver / returner, JJ Nelson. Speedy. And we talked about it on the pre-draft show on the offensive side. How in the world does he play football at 156 pounds? I like the pick. He's fast, track star fast. But that build, now, Bruce Arians doesn't seem real concerned. He says, okay, we'll get him up to 175. It'll be no big deal. There were no big deal. Why hadn't he? I mean, granted, it's college. It's different world. But you wouldn't think that he – because I've seen kids, you know, from high school to college, and I've seen the changes that have made them have their bodies transform immensely, even after one off season heading into their freshman year. It's amazing. And he couldn't do that. He couldn't get bigger than 155. So I like the pick. Because, I mean, immediately he can step in and return kicks, and he's going to be a better option than Ted Ginn. And that's great. So already it's a plus. If he does anything in the return game, fantastic. And the receiving guy, I doubt he'll see a few trick packages just to get him and John Brown on the field at the same time, just to make it fun for defenses. But I just like the pick. We'll see if we love it if he becomes a big time returner.
Yeah, and that's, I think people are like, oh, let's see he and John Brown out and running nine routes. And it's like, if those two are on the field, every defense knows what you're going to do, and they're just going to back everybody up. Because, you know, Nelson right now doesn't show anything in terms of the ability to win, you know, short. So
you got to do as a defensive back, give him a hand and he'll follow. Boop.
Yeah.
155 pounds.
It's a good thing they play indoors. A stiff wind might blow him over during games. So, you know, he's very thin. But you watch his game against Mississippi State, and he had a couple nice returns. And then you watch some of his highlights, and again, they're highlights for a reason, but most of his highlights come in the form of on specials, and that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with getting a fifth round pick that, you know, fits a need and makes a weakness a strength. And let's be honest, ever since the magical rookie season of Patrick Peterson, the Cardinals have been looking for a consistent, not a one game against the New York Giants, but a consistent return game, and the hope is JJ Nelson can be that. Because, you know, when you watch him play and you look at his times, he ran that 4.28, so the straight line speed is unquestionable, but I mean, he's not super like short area quickness guy.
His three cone was, you know, I think Marcus Golden's three cone was faster than Nelson's.
Yeah, so I mean, he's not a guy that's gonna change direction and make, you know, players miss. He's going to be a guy that needs blocks, and if he gets a seam, he's gone. If not, you know, he's probably going to get tackled fairly easily. I will say this, when I watch, you know, the game that they have, and then his highlights. The one thing that you notice on every time he has the ball in his hands is he never gets hit square, like ever. He never gets hit right, you know, in the numbers or in the chest or in the mouth. And I think that's partially because he's so small, but I think it's partially because he knows how to take a hit. And that's an important thing in the NFL. And people equate size with something, but in reality, it's how you know how to take hits. And that's, you know, going back to David Johnson, that's one of the things that you want to see with David Johnson better is him learn to get into a position to take a hit as opposed to being, you know, taking those big blows.
Exactly. And the one thing I don't worry nearly so much, because in the return game, you don't nearly see big hits on the returners. They usually end up going out of bounds very few times, unless on a punt return, they just make a stupid play where they don't call a fair catch and they get popped. Other than that, you really don't see it that much. Now on the field receivers. Yeah. Please don't ever send him over the middle. He will die. I mean, I think he would literally die death on the field. Especially imagine him going over the middle against Seattle secondary. He's dead. Dead number 19 on the field. Bye-bye draft pick.
Yeah. And like I said, you don't like the Cardinals are at a point right now where they don't necessarily need guys to be more than just role players when they draft them. You know, they did a good job building this team from the ground up, and now they're in a position where they're drafting role players. And if they become anything more than a role player, that's just a bonus. And so, you know, you take chances on guys like Gunter and Riddick, and then you draft a guy like Nelson, who is strictly a return guy right now. And you just, you know, if they all work out, that's great. If not, it's not going to impact us in terms of right now.
And the final pick of the draft, they got tight end / H-back / fullback / linebacker, because he kind of played it all in college, but tight end Gerald Christian with the last pick in the draft. All I can say to this is meh. He was the last pick in the draft. He's an athletic tight end who can do things that the Arians wants in terms of a versatile tight end / H-back. Bruce Arians said he will be really good on special teams. But when you got the last pick of the draft, you can't really get more excited than meh. And that's me on the Christian pick. Hopefully he does something. I mean, Jim Dre was 7th round pick. He's turned, you know, Jim Dre turned himself, had to have himself, got himself that second contract. He's not really good at anything, but he does things solid enough that, you know, if you get Jim Dre production out of Gerald Christian, fantastic.
Yeah, and I think Christian can be a guy that is a little bit of a move tight end. I think he can replace Hughes. I can't remember the guy's first name at this point. Jerry Hughes. Who's that? Oh, that's the
Jerry
pass rusher.
The pass rusher. Yeah.
Yeah. Robert, I think he can replace Robert Hughes as, you know, the quote unquote fullback. I know Arians doesn't call him that, but, and then I think he can be a guy, like you said, move tight end, plays into that Jim Dre role. And then you know, again, a 7th round pick. I think it was going to be close for him making the roster. But if he can contribute on specials, and now with the fact that the Cardinals only have 3 tight ends really on the roster, it's going to be hard for him not to make the roster at this point.
So now let's talk about, we brought it up a little bit. Let's look at the long-term, the short-term, what roles will these players have? It's going back to the top of the draft. You got DJ Humphreys. I believe they envision him being a starter this year at right tackle, even if he's not a starter. The reason I like the pick. And I apologize to Bradley Sal. This is not because I pointed this out the other day. I made a comment on Twitter about how DJ Humphreys, in terms of talent, even if he doesn't start, is a better option coming off the bench as a swing tackle than a guy like Bradley Sal. Probably because he's going to play left tackle a little bit better. He can play left tackle, right tackle. He's comfortable. In fact, Humphrey says he can play really any position. He's comfortable doing that. And, you know, on Twitter, I Bradley Sal then favored that tweet. I have a feeling that they do that every once in a while, just favorite a tweet or two, just to know, hey, I noticed that, and I'm going to prove you wrong, which is, I meant it in no way to offend Bradley Sal, the person or the player. I like the guy. He's a great guy in the locker room. But obviously, he's made it where he's, well, it wasn't necessarily because of this high-end talent. He didn't get drafted. But I think Humphreys is the better option there, even if he doesn't start. And if anything were to happen to Gerald Valdir, we saw Bradley Sal left tackle. It was okay at best. And I think Humphrey gives you a better upside than that. So even hopefully he starts, because I think that's what they envision him doing. But even if not, Bobby Mass is going to go get some money this next offseason after a season at right tackle, and then it'll be Humphrey's job.
Yeah, I think you want him to start. If he doesn't, that's slightly disappointing. But as you said, it's basically a getting ready for 2016 in the worst case where he doesn't win that job. I think it'll be, like I said, slightly disappointing if Bobby Massey's your starter next year.
But maybe that means he steps up and plays really well, so which isn't a bad thing either.
I think you'll still be upset that your first round pick 2 out of 3 years doesn't make an impact in their first year. I think that's fair to be upset True. About that, but you know, I think, like you said, worst case scenario is he's your backup swing tackle and he takes over in 2016.
Marcus Golden, that's an interesting thing, and it's especially considering the state of the position. Yes, they got Alex Okafor. The team has moved Matt Shaughnessy from outside linebacker to defensive end. So obviously they brought in Lamar Woodley. I think as of today, the team intends on having Woodley start. You'll have Woodley and Okafor starting it at outside linebacker. You got Lorenzo Alexander, special teams guy. Who knows if he gets any playing time? You've got Kareem Martin moved to outside linebacker. And then after that, you don't really have a whole lot. So especially if they compare Golden to Woodley, there is perhaps, because we honestly have no idea how much Woodley's got left in the tank. People talk about, hey, he's going to have if he's going to have a Larry Foote type season. I don't think you can say that since, and I wrote a piece about that, and you said it was like I was writing it and you were writing it in my name, because Foote, he came off that injury in 2013. And then came back and played solid overall. Was a pretty good linebacker, was what the team needed there in 2014. However, if you go back to 2012, he had a really productive season. Woodley has not had a productive season in, 3 years? So I don't know if you can expect him to do that. I figured with the signing, since it was a vet minimum, probably he's going to be a bench guy. I think Golden has a decent shot at starting, especially with the type of player he is. Outside shot.
Yeah, and I think you want him to start and kind of be Sam Acho at worst, right? To start out with. I'm not saying, forever, but obviously you'd like to see him be Sam Acho to start with and then from there improve. Worst case scenario, I don't know. I mean, is he a two down, Matt Shaughnessy type outside linebacker that comes off in passing situations? I don't think you'd want to see that right now, but if that's the worst case scenario for year one, I think you're okay with that scenario.
And look at David Johnson. It's that he's actually, I think he's kind of the shoe-in for the most likely to have the most impact in year one, because they're looking for a guy to complement Andre Ellington, a bigger guy. They can go really, they have some of the same skill set. We'll see
David
how much playing time.
A better receiver already.
And which is saying something, because Ellington's got really, he drops a few passes, but Ellington's gotten rave reviews, probably like he's the best receiving running back I've ever seen. He's the best receiver, I don't know. But I think David Johnson has a really good shot of getting a significant playing time this year. But I don't know if he'll end up playing more snaps than Andre Ellington or not, but he'll be a big contributor this year. And I think that should be the expectation.
Yeah. And I think that's a fair expectation. If you're saying you're going to get like a 40-60 split, Johnson, the 40 and Ellington, the 60, I think one, you're okay with that. And two, you're going to,
that's good for everyone.
Yeah. And it's probably going to be similar numbers. Cause I think for Johnson, that'll be the ability to make plays both receiving and rushing. And then, you know, obviously we know what Ellington can do when he's healthy. So that's what you're hoping happens here.
We go to the fourth round with Ronnie Gunter. We kind of talked about, you kind of mentioned up, is the fact that, I don't know, say, and as much as it'd be interesting to see him play, other than a spot snap here or there or garbage time, I don't see how he can crack the rotation just based on who they have, because you've already got Calais Campbell, you already got Corey Peters, you already got Corey Redding, you've got Matt Shaughnessy, who's now a defensive lineman. He's going to play because he's their best run stuffer. So you've already got four guys there, and then you got on top of that, is Peters going to be there? Well, you got Frosty Rucker as well. Unless you end up cutting a guy like Rucker, cutting Shaughnessy, I don't see Gunter. Well, then you got to add Stinson to the mix too. I don't see how Gunter's going to crack playing time. I don't think, just unless there's injuries like last season, I don't see. And Stinson really only played because of the Darnell Dockett injury on top of that. I just don't see any scenario, a reasonable scenario, that sees Gunter playing any more than a few snaps all season.
I think you don't want to see him unless he's, you know, like, insane during the preseason, but you got to remember he's only played, I think, 5 years of football. So it's not you're talking about a guy that's been playing forever. I think you're fine with him coming in and kind of being bench guy 1A and, or, you know, maybe 3A. I don't know. And then, you know, you just kind of go from there.
And we move to the pick of Shaq Riddick. Shaq Riddick is an interesting. Oh, and I was going to go back to the Cardinals are kind of setting this up. If you look at their free agent situation, Frosty Rucker goes off the books after this season. Matt Shaughnessy, the free agent after this next season. So they have room. They have room for him to grow into that position. You know, Corey Redding's on a 2-year deal. I don't know if he'll play more than the one season. Peters is the guy they got for 3 years, so they plan on keeping him probably long term. We go to Riddick. I think if he really flashes, I mean, that'd be great. I don't think we can expect much. Maybe he can play that. He'll get those Marcus Bernard type snaps where he gets 4 or 5 snaps again on just a pure pass rush situation. But again, his role is likely looking more towards the year after that. And I can see in a year from now a solid 4-man rotation between the outside linebackers if Kareem Martin develops, because that's still an F of Martin, Okafor, and Golden and Riddick. And then after that, I mean, you have to look forward to, because then Okafor will hit that fourth year next year. Are you going to want to retain him, extend it, that sort of thing? So next year, 2016 is more of the thing, but I hope he gets a few Marcus Bernard snaps. Maybe he gets a sack or two just to kind of pique everyone's interest and see that the talent's there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you could see him in certain run or passing down situations later in the year as, you know, he develops, but I wouldn't be shocked if he's a guy that, you know, would have been practice squatted at this point, you know, if they feel like he passes through. Like a lot of people I trust and I talked to were surprised that they took him because they felt like he would have been an undrafted free agent. So it's just, you know, it's just interesting because they obviously liked him enough. I kind of equate it to Logan Thomas last year, that they obviously liked the guy enough to make the pick where they did and not worry about it going forward, because they want to give him some time.
The J.J. Nelson pick, I think it's clear. Return, 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 return. If he never does anything more than that, I don't care. Cause if he fixes the return game and if he's at least average in the return game, we win. Cause that's a market improvement. We don't need him to play receiver. If he does play receiver, fun, but he doesn't ever need to be more than a returner.
Nope, you're right. There's really nothing more to say. As long as he wins the return job. If he doesn't win the return job, then I think it's
a waste of a pick if he can't. And the last pick, you got Gerald Christian. Role, what is he going to play? I mean, he's got the particular position, that particular role, he has definitely an opportunity to the squad. He has definitely has an opportunity to be on the field. Will he get any stats at all? I don't know. You know, a few 5 or 6, 7 yard passes here and there, but his impact will be on special teams and the fact that he can play the position that Arians wants. I don't expect any sort of big time role for Christian, even moving forward, because I don't think the type of role that he'll play will be anything more than a role player type thing. He's not going to be a big time pass catcher, and he'll be a, you know, if he can be a good blocker, be versatile, play special teams, that's all we can expect from it at his ceiling.
Yeah, I think, and I think you're happy with that. If he replaces Robert Hughes and is a contributor on specials and in the run game, and you know, maybe catches 10 passes a year, I think you're happy with that.
The last part, and this is what I'm going to lean on you a little bit more, since you've done a little more of the scouting, you've done the rate, you have a lot of more people you've talked to. But the Arizona Cardinals have announced the signing, the addition of 14 undrafted free agent rookies. I don't know what to expect of that, but they flooded the position at inside linebacker. And here are the names. The names include Adam State cornerback Cariel Brooks, NC State tackle Rob Crisp. That's the Steve Keim pick, I'm sure. Then you've got BYU linebacker Lonnie Fua, Shippensburg wide receiver Trevor Harmon, who happens to be Bruce Arians' nephew, Georgia Southern linebacker Edwin Jackson, Florida Atlantic linebacker Andre Kirk, BYU running back Paula Syke, who happens to be a former rugby player, New Zealander, Bowling Green linebacker Gabe Martin, Iowa receiver Damon Powell, Colorado State Pueblo cornerback C.J. Roberts, Texas receiver Jackson Shipley, Missouri State tight end Gannon Sinclair, Montana linebacker Zach Wagaman, and Northern Iowa nose tackle Xavier Williams. I know you were talking about Xavier Williams a little bit on Twitter today. Tell us about what do you know about this crop of undrafted rookies?
Any of the small school guys, I don't know a ton about, to be honest with you. Like Shippensburg. I know he's Bruce Arians' cousin or nephew or whatever.
So I'd never even heard of the place Shippensburg. Adam, so
yeah, Adam State cornerback. I have no idea, to be honest with you. I can start with Xavier Williams. He was a guy I told you about that I thought he, instead of taking like Eddie Goldman, or who was the other guy? Danny Shelton, even though Shelton wasn't available. I would have taken Xavier Williams. And he's a guy that, he understands his role as a nose tackle. And when it comes to nose tackles, I think that's important. You want a guy that can hold down and kind of absorb blocks and eat up space, and I think that'll be him. I think their goal here is to push Alameda Te'amu, and we'll see if Williams can do that. He's he's only 6'2", but he's like 3'10", so he's basically just a bowling ball of a man. and he's actually got a little bit of a pass rush ability to his game, so he's. He's a guy that can, maybe down the road be more than just a nose tackle type. But right now, I think his low center of gravity and ability to take on double teams makes him a guy that the Cardinals are interested in. And I'm sure that's what they pitched to him as a prospect, that, hey, we need a nose tackle too. And you're going to get a chance to come in and compete with a guy in Alameda Te'amu and may the best man win. So I think you're happy to see him come in here.
In terms of, I read up a little bit. I ran across a scouting report about Alani Fua, the linebacker from BYU, big tall guy, 6'5", 235, super fast. And if there's one thing that Bruce Arians mentioned, it's not necessarily for guys he wants to start, because I think they're content with who knows if the, what's going to happen with Darryl Washington, but with Sean Weatherspoon and Kevin Minter kind of handling those two duties at the Mo and the Mike positions at inside linebacker. But what Arians wants is, in particular, is the depth. He wants more speed, especially for special teams. Kenny Demons, solid special teams player. Slow, slow, slow. And Glenn Carson, I don't think, is particularly speedy as well. But you get a guy like Alani Fua who's very fast. And like we're talking speedy, but he has a really slight frame. He's really tall. He's a guy that you could add to teams and add speed to the back end, back there. And I guess another one that I ran across a little bit is, I think Gabe Martin is another solid guy that you might see make some noise. And then the linebacker, Zach Wadham out of Montana, I read is kind of, I can't remember if it was right before the draft. I think I ran across his name as a kind of diamond in the rough type pass rusher that you could find late in the draft. And he ended up going undrafted.
Yeah, Wagaman's a guy I've actually watched a little bit of, and you know he's a talented, try hard type of guy. Same mold as Marcus Golden. He's actually got better like short area burst than Goldman, Goldman. Jeez. He's a guy that again, you look at, he's not really weight room strong. He has a bit of a good punch, but I think he's a guy that really took advantage of his competition, which is good. I mean, that's not a bad thing. If you're in the Big Sky and you play well, that's good. I don't know if he can do anything as a pass rusher in the pros right off the bat, because he's a guy that he won with speed and just kind of being better than other people. And now he's going to be going up against the NFL players, and you don't win that way. So you have to have some sort of move set and ability to you know, do something, counter moves and things of that nature. And I'm not sure he can do that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him.
I'm looking at kind of if I had to pick a guy who I think might make some noise, Gabe Martin. I'm looking at the bio they have for him. He says he was a 3-year starter, finished career with 246 tackles, 144 solos, 30 for losses, 10 sacks, 3 picks, 4 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery. He was a team captain his senior year, 115 tackles, 2 interceptions, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery. He was second team All MAC. He had 18 tackles for losses. That's the type of guy I see them doing. Let me pull up Gabe Martin scouting. See what kind of speed he got. And Gabe Martin comes out. Is he the speedier guy? He ran his lowest. Now, what he ran across at his pro day was 4.61. They have his lowest time listed at 4.51. So this is a guy who's got speed. And his three, he doesn't, it's not great. He isn't great change of direction to 7.263 cone, but strong 23 reps on 225 of bench press. So 6'2", 234. That could be a guy that you could see, at least if you look in physical terms and character, would be a guy who could be depth there at inside linebacker.
Yeah, I don't know much about him, to be honest with you. So he's just one of those guys that he's going to have to show up on game days and see what happens. I'm trying to see, I'm trying to look through my text here, because I know somebody told me about Edwin Jackson, because I made fun of him, because I'm like, oh, the pitcher for that used to play for the Diamondbacks. So, and they just talked about how athletic he was, and but now I can't find anything on it because I can't get through all my texts fast enough. So sorry about that. But yeah, he's go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Alani Fua. He's he did a 4.73 at the combine, but his pro day was 4.6 and 4.57. But at the combine for linebackers, he had the best 3 cone drill among linebackers, 6.83, which is exactly what they had from Golden. And he's 6'5", 238. So he's a much taller guy. He's tall, And he can do a lot of, you know, he says he's an angular outside linebacker prospect. I think he would play in the 3-4 high. He'd play inside is what they have him projected at. Go ahead about what you said about Edwin Jackson, though.
So, yeah. So now I just found his times because it was before all the times came out. And yeah, he only ran a 4.8 and he's like 5'11". So that's interesting because he's like small. It only weighed 228 pounds and he ran a 4.8. So I don't see how he sticks. he might just be a camp body right now. Honestly, what they signed, 14. If four of these guys got offers to, you know, come to camp, I think that'd probably be good.
And pretty much all of these guys will end up in camp. What you have to look at is the longer term. If you look back to 2013, they ended up with Tony Jefferson and Jerron Brown, who made the final roster, but they weren't even big. They didn't really make contributions until last year, where they became important contributors. Chandler Catanzaro made the squad last year, obviously started. But yeah, it's the guys that make the practice squad. You got guys like Anthony Steen. Those are the guys that you kind of look at. These guys will hopefully Glenn Carson, who made the roster as well last year. So they did a couple of guys. But usually it's year two when they look to make more of an impact. So this year is like creep into the back of the roster, practice squad. But there's always one or two every year. So we'll have to keep an eye on those guys. Anything else draft wise about the Cardinals that we haven't, that hasn't been said yet that you want to get out there?
I think you have to look at what the teams in their division did, and you see that every team basically has the same mantra and mold, and that's to get or stay physical. I mean, you look what the Rams did. They got the best running back in the draft and maybe one of the best running backs from the last.
Big linemen.
They got very physical linemen, like you said. I haven't seen was a guy I talked about on here about, you know, maybe in the third round, and they picked him in the second round. So you're talking about just guys that they are drafting for the division. The Seahawks drafted Frank Clark, who is a, you know, character disaster off the field. But, you know, as a player, he's really good. So, Tyler Lockett was a guy we talked about a lot.
Why'd they have to get Lockett?
You know, and I think Lockett was one of the players you didn't want to see end up in your division. And then you look at the 49ers and they're kind of in a Hunter. Weird like transition.
They drafted up Hunter. They drafted Chandler Catanzaro's punter. He was the guy that kept Catanzaro from doing kickoffs because Bradley Pinion, he's got a cannon of a leg, and he did kickoffs, and that's why Catanzaro never did kickoffs when he was in college, because their All-American punter who would just bomb kickoffs, so that kept him off the field. Well, so yeah,
and he's the same size as Randy Gregory. He's like 6'5", 230. So, you know, I think the two things you'll want to watch going forward here, and is you hope that Randy Gregory doesn't go the Justin Houston route. Not because you don't want him to succeed, but you don't want to see the Cardinals again miss on an impact pass rusher because of what a guy did off the field. And like I said, I'm fine. If you don't want to take character guys, I'm always okay with that. But, we're cool with, and by we, I don't mean you and I, but, you know, a lot of fans are cool with Darrell Washington coming back from his off the field stuff, yet don't want to give Randy Gregory a chance. So I find that interesting. And then you look at the fact that they did, I felt like a combo the Cardinals did of best available player and needs as they went along. I feel like, you know, round one was kind of that best player available mentality, and then two and three saw them address their needs, and then round four 5 and you know, and beyond were all about guys that they just liked. So that addressed what they wanted to do down the road. And you can see something I would caution Cardinals fans, and you and I have talked about it. This is what good teams do. They're able to draft for 2016 and 17. They don't need impact from a lot of these guys in 2015. And that's just something as Cardinals fans, we're not used to seeing. So I think from there, that's what you have to remember going forward.
Well, there you have it, Arizona Cardinals fans. This has been another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rood, and we've talked NFL draft and a little bit of John Carlson. We've now hit the part of the offseason. We probably will take a hiatus for quite a while. I imagine we might get back on the air when we have mini camp, which will be in June. But because I can't, unless something else comes up between now and then, I can't imagine us doing a show just to talk about. Not much, because that, you know, they'll be in not doing much at all. So thank you for listening, whether it's live, whether it's via download. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You have a wonderful day, wonderful evening, and thank you for listening.
Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.